I'm Carol Hills and for Marco Werman, and you're with The World. We're a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH in Boston. All this year, we've been paying extra attention to the status of women worldwide and how things are changing or not. We call the project Across Women's Lives. Over the next 2 weeks, we're looking at civil rights for women under the law and in society at large. Now, put yourself in a place, in a country, where if you face danger, your only relief may be to run. The woman we'll hear about next faced that dilemma, and the danger came from her own family. So she fled to the U.S., but whether she can stay and other women in situations like hers is controversial, as The World's Monica Campbell explains.
What happened to Nina has to do with the man she loves. She met him in Saudi Arabia through a friend. He was from Yemen, like her, and as Nina puts it, he seemed like a man of good deeds. Nina and her husband asked me not to use their real names. When I meet the couple and their young children, they're far from home, in Oakland, in a low-income housing project. They're here for reasons we'll hear about next, and their future is uncertain. See, when they first met in Saudi Arabia, Nina's dad gave the couple his blessing. That was a big deal because it meant breaking from the family's original plan for Nina to force her to marry a stranger, her cousin, in Yemen. But then Nina's dad died just after giving his blessing, and following tradition and the law in Saudi Arabia, her brothers became her keeper. She was trapped at home, she says. Her brothers insisted she marry her cousin. It'd keep Nina's dowry in the family. She refused and paid the price. They threatened her, and she was abused, she says. Her brothers beat her until she nearly passed out. She escaped, though, with the man she chose as her husband. We'll call him Khalid. He says they hid from her family.
And every couple of weeks we change our address because, you know, we don't want anyone to find us. Her brother, they told me they're going to kill me.
Nina fled with Khalid to the U.S. Now, she's fighting to stay here with her family as refugees. But there's no guarantee of that. Nina and more women like her are testing U.S. law, seeking asylum because of danger they say they face because of their gender.
So if you open it up, you'll see their initial asylum application. And then I have
Simona Agnolucci is Nina's lawyer. She shows me the binder for her case, 6 inches thick.
Definitely over 1,000 pages. And we have here a index to the second part of the binder, which itself contains
a tough case, extremely tough. Some say that's because U.S. law is stuck in the past, in post-World War II, when Congress decided who could get asylum here. Karen Musalo is at the University of California at Hastings in San Francisco.
Looking at people persecuted because they were Jews for their, you know, religion, or because they were communists for their political opinion, but that what happens to women is often not done by governments. It's by their intimate partner in their communities, by their family. And it was just not seen that violations of women's rights were human rights violations.
Musalo has pushed for change and gotten some. U.S. law now extends asylum to women facing female genital cutting and domestic violence. The reasoning goes that even if a country's laws are strong in the books, if they aren't enforced, women deserve protection. But Musalo says more change is needed.
What about these other forms of gender harm that occur to women all the time? What about forced marriage? What about trafficking for sexual exploitation?
President Barack Obama once pledged he'd be bold on this area of women's rights and asylum. But there's worry now, as he winds up his presidency, he won't fulfill his promise. Dan Stein worries about the opposite happening. He leads the Federation for American Immigration Reform in Washington, trying to get members of Congress to further restrict asylum.
It all has to start with a consensus on what the purpose of asylum is in the United States. That consensus seems to be falling apart as we broaden asylum in ways that are completely unmanageable.
Stein says the dangers women like Nina face are private matters to be settled in their own countries. But Nina's husband, Khalid, says he'd be killed if they returned. And it's not like he wanted to leave Saudi Arabia otherwise. He was a corporate executive back there. Here, he's worked as an Uber driver and a pizza maker.
And I work in grocery store and some in like in bad location. I deal with like crack dealer. I start not from the zero, less than the zero.
They'll live in limbo until Nina's case is decided. And that won't be until 2019, her lawyer says. There's a massive backlog at immigration courts.
We can't know what the future holds. They're really just living one day at a time.
I ask Nina, what if she's denied asylum and deported? She says she's not thinking about that. She hopes she'll win her case and stay and move the needle a bit for other women like her to have safer lives here in the U.S. too. For The World, I'm Monica Campbell, Oakland, California.
Coming up tomorrow, our reporter introduces us to women in Thailand who are getting trained for life outside prison.
This is a story about Thai massage, but not the illicit kind you probably just imagined when I said that. So try to refocus.
That story's coming up tomorrow. You can check out all our stories with the hashtag HerRights. And as part of that series, all this week, you can follow Marco Werman and our team live on the ground from Mumbai, India. You can see Marco on a fun new app called Periscope. Just download and follow @WomensLives.